barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
It is a Follow Friday. Follow Friday, Super Chat Friday here on Menace to Sports. It is September 9th. If you didn't know the date, get a fucking calendar. Get an Apple Watch. It says it right there. But we are here on a Follow Friday. Follow Fridays around here. We do two things. One, this is a Mailbag Friday where we answer all your questions. We're obviously going to talk about the weekend slate of college football. We're going to talk about current events. We're going to talk about Jalen Ramsey getting absolutely fucking cooked all night last night. We're going to talk about all of that. But it's also a chance for Super Chats to come through and you to ask us questions. Every Super Chat gets thrown on the board. Gets thrown on screen, and we answer everything. And then also, it's a Follow Friday. So let me go ahead, Chris. Let me put up our personal where are we at? Boom. There you go. Hit that follow button. Go hit Chris up on Twitter. Hit me up on Twitter or Instagram or both. And then down in the bio, we have a link. It is a Linktree link to all the Menace to Sports accounts on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. Go follow them all. It is a Follow Friday, and we are here to network. It's a networking Friday.
It's a networking.
Chris, how you doing on this fine Friday? You ready for the fucking weekend or what?
I am, dude. I'm so ready for the weekend, ready for football, obviously. It's like the highlight of my week is Saturday, and then it's kind of like a lull to get through the rest of it. I did enjoy a long weekend, obviously, like we all did last weekend, 3 days of football. Here we are. We're back. You watched the game last night?
I watched the entire game last night. You know, fantasy football players, I see you having the chat. Chris wrote in the show notes. He said, sorry to everyone who drafted Cam Akers or a black wide receiver for the Rams. I don't know what happened. Like, Scott Frost picked up the phone this morning and called Sean McVay and said, bro, did you not watch our opening game? You cannot throw it to that many white guys.
It's crazy. First of all, I was shocked about Cam Akers, and I feel like everybody that drafted with the ESPN leagues should feel lied to. His projected total this year was over 200, and now he's the fourth back?
It's crazy. Crazy, and I'm going to tell you what, I drafted him. Now, it was a late-round pick, but I drafted James Cook. I certainly didn't play him because I never play rookies early in the year, but I always try to take a flyer to try to find the rookie of the year, you know? And I think James Cook had a decent shot in Buffalo. I mean, I know they had Zach Moss from Utah, but this man got one carry, fumbled, and they said, sit your ass on a bench. He got the Josh Proctor treatment. They said, buddy, you're out. We'll try again next week. Minus 2 points or something like that.
Crazy. I did in my money league, Zach, I did start the Buffalo Bills defense, and that was a plus. You know how many sacks they had last night?
Seven sacks and two picks?
Yes. They scored 22. So shout out to that Bills defense. But, hey, I mean, it was tail of the tape, we'll call it. Zach, bro, what's up with Jalen Ramsey? Is he still an elite corner?
He was getting cooked.
Overacting to week one, but he was getting fucking cooked.
He was getting fried. But at the end of the day, Cooper Kupp's the best receiver in the NFL, right? When you look at it. And then you go to the other side, Stephon Diggs is just cooking him up, making a case that, you know what, maybe I deserve a little credit here because he was cooking him up. And they were going back and forth, talking shit. Stephon Diggs was you know, you saw the one touchdown pass that Jalen Ramsey broke up, and Stephon Diggs was like, ooh, like in his face, like that was that close. And he got him a couple times. And I did see that they said he had a perfect passer rating. So I don't know how that works out because I watched him break up the one touchdown throw. So yeah. I don't understand how passer rating goes. I like to know completion percentage and how many PBUs they had, right? Like if they're at 100% completion percentage, fuck the QBR. I don't really care. That's a bad day for the corner, right?
And well, here's the numbers when targeting him. Seven catches. Or wait, he was targeted seven times. So he only broke up the one. Allowed six receptions for 124 yards and two touchdowns.
Just crazy, crazy. So I mean, it's
Denzel Ward would never.
Denzel Ward would never. Marshawn Lattimore would never. And I know those are two Ohio State guys. There's plenty of other ones that would not. I mean, what are you talking about? Marshawn goes against the best of the best. and never had a stat line like that.
Never.
It's a bad day for him. But you know what? In both of our fantasy football leagues with the VIP subscribers on Patreon, we have two separate leagues because our general tier got way too big. We couldn't have one league. We had to do two leagues. In both leagues, I have the Bills defense and Josh Allen fucking cooking.
Oh, yeah. You're going crazy. I opted not to draft Cooper Kupp number one overall. Maybe I should have. Bro, someone said that Allen Robinson signed with the Rams just to run suicides.
It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, I actually, our handicapping service didn't put this out, but I bet Allen Robinson over targets or over catches and over receiving yards. And some bitch had like one catch for 4 yards. It's just like, what are we doing? We're throwing to this kid from fucking Northwestern that transferred to Notre Dame. Like, what are we doing? Throwing it to too many white guys.
That's why they lost the game. It's just funny because you would figure like Cooper Kupp just won the Triple Crown, Zach. So you would think that he would get the Calvin Johnson treatment,
right?
But he's not. They're one upping him. I don't know if it's schematics or what. Cooper Kupp does his thing. And shout out to everyone that stayed up to watch NFL football last night. Want to throw this one up just real quick because we did open up our show talking about youth sports. Thank you, Tony, for the 20. Yesterday, when you guys were talking about youth sports and the shooting in Florida, that was falsely reported. It was a kid who got in a fight and lost and came back. And was shooting, nothing to do with adults. I was there, Tony.
No, I wasn't saying adults did the shooting in Florida. I spoke about the Aqib Talib's brother shooting the coach, and that obviously that dad hitting the ref. But I actually didn't know those details. I didn't know who was doing shooting. I just knew there were shootings at a youth football game, and they're canceling the games because of the liability with Fields. But that is great information. I appreciate you sharing, and that's fucked up. But that's what's wrong with this fucking society.
And we're glad you're okay. Like,
yeah, right. Hell yeah.
That's a fucking scary ass thing. Zach, coming up a little bit later, we got the Mensa's coming on. So of course I'll leave most of the picks and stuff to him.
We got all your gambling advice coming up soon with our lead handicapper, especially when it comes to props. And he's built this college football model with me that we're going to attack this season. It won't be live till about week 3 or week 4, because you have to get a nice data set and we beta test it every week, but I still give out the plays that I like, which I will later. And I'm not, but I actually bet them, but I would advise you not to yet, because I need that data analytical model to back up my opinions. It's just too early. You can't bet on these teams yet because you don't know how good they are.
Yeah, because the computer model looks at things with no bias, like no star rankings or anything. Yeah. So obviously you want to get to that point. Zach, week 2 is here, though. There's a couple things that I'm looking forward to. I don't know what you're looking forward to, but I typed up my own list. Maybe number 1, I'm excited to see Sam Hartman and what version of Sam Hartman we get back.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just happy the kid gets to play again, because that was scary. It was like, oh shit, he's out. He might not play again. And then they announced he's coming back, and now he gets to go out there and play Vanderbilt. And you know, we'll see, because I really liked him last year. I thought he was a good player at Wake. I thought he was going to, you know, at least elevate the Wake to their ceiling as high as he could make them. But it's definitely a feel good story, and it's going to be fun to just to at least watch his highlights and see him get back on the field, because I know that'll be emotional for him and something that he loves the game.
And a legitimate top 10 quarterback in college football this year. I mean,
absolutely.
I'm really rooting for him, and obviously, like, shaping up. I mean, he's going to have to at some point go play Florida State, and Florida State looks like, I can't believe I'm saying this, like the cream of the crop of the ACC, them in Miami, given what we saw from Clemson, which, what a bizarre fucking sentence. What a bizarre sentence.
No doubt. And I don't know if you saw the video I tweeted out, but the Florida State's wearing the iced out, all white uniforms, all white helmet, all white uniforms. And the craziest part is, in the promo video that they did, right, they had the two players walk in, put them on. They're playing Louisville. They're wearing them against Louisville. Both players in the promo video transferred from Louisville.
That's dope. We love passive aggressive little jabs like that.
Oh yeah.
Is that game tonight?
Yeah, it's Friday night. Yep, tonight. Oh no, Louisville plays UCF tonight. I'm sorry.
Okay, Louisville UCF tonight, but they are wearing those uniforms later on against them. Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Florida State's got a bye. I think that they got a bye. That's why
they have a bye, because they have the week 0 game. So it's like weird with the NCAA rules given the day they played. I'll be watching Louisville. I mean, we keep hearing Malik Cunningham could be the next Lamar. There will be no next Lamar, but I am excited to watch Malik play.
Yeah.
Additionally, the worst defense in college football, in my opinion, Zach, is North Carolina. And this, to me, is going to lead to a potentially historic year for Drake May.
Oh,
May is going to have to air that bitch out.
He's just going to have to throw it all over the field. I mean, that shit we watched last week with North Carolina's defense. What was there, 62 points scored in the fourth quarter or something like that?
40 points in the fourth quarter alone.
Just and North Carolina has always had a suspect defense, at least recently. And for them to have this horrific of a defense, he's gonna have to throw the ball all over the field. It's gonna be like 2 minute offense playing from behind every single time they have the ball. And so yeah, he's gonna put up video game numbers.
He needed to throw what, 5 or 6 touchdowns against Appalachian State to get a win. Like, think this about is how that. Bad their defense is, Zach. Crazy. That onside kick at the end of the game, they returned for a touchdown. And the correct coaching call would have been to go down to the 2 yard line so you can
kneel. You have to because you give them, when you score that touchdown, it's no different than breaking a run, you know, with a minute and a half left and you're up by one. Like, you cannot score that touchdown because you give them a possession up by or down by 8 and they can tie the game, which that's exactly which what happened. Yeah. And we watched it. Penn State did it, I think, 2 years ago. They had, I think it might have been Miles Sanders. He broke free and the defense was trying to let him score. And he didn't go down inside against Indiana. He didn't go down inside the 10. If he just falls down, they just take a knee and win the game. He scores. Indiana drives down the field and scores, goes to overtime, and Indiana wins the game. You have to. If you scoring a touchdown still keeps the game at a one possession game, you have to go down. You cannot score that touchdown.
Yeah. But I guess, like, how do you coach that up on an onside kick? Like, you're just coaching to get the onside kick.
First of all, the number one rule on an onside kick is you catch it and fucking fall down. You never return an onside kick ever. Never. Because what scenario would a team onside kick the ball where you need to score? They are clearly down. It's clearly late in the game. Unless a surprise onside kick would be a little different, but you've already got that field position. Just fucking catch it and fall down. You never return an onside kick.
Zach, it hit him in the chest in stride, and there was a gaping hole.
I mean, I get it. You're like, fuck this. I'm trying to get on SportsCenter. Deuces.
And he housed that bitch, dude. He housed it. And, yes, and honestly, did. Like, I don't blame him because I hear you, Zach. But even when you coach or if Heartland coached, if one of those receivers catch an onside kick with a hole like that, you think they're going down immediately? You talk about receivers or divas.
It's just skill players, football players. Like, Tyvus Powell picked off the ball against Alabama and returned it. Like, for no damn reason. Just risking a fumble.
What were you and Urban thinking when he was returning it?
Oh my God, the whole sideline is screaming, like flipping out, like, geez, get down. Like, and then he came off the field and he said, I know. He wouldn't even entertain it. It just sealed the game with a pick. Like, you can't be that pissed at me. I didn't fumble. It didn't end like you were terrified it would. And so he was just like, I know. My bad. But we're going to the Natty, by the way. But we're going to the Natty, so you can't be pissed.
Facts. Well, I guess, like, I guess you can't really yell at him. If he knows, he knows. I mean, you could tell him some or not, but he did secure it. All right, Zach, I have a couple questions I want to get into, and then I want to chat.
Yeah.
I want to chat. All right. A couple questions that before we get into the meat of things. I have a question. So we put up that video, like, what, August 2nd? We're talking about competitive stamina and how important it was. And it's very cool. Hint, hint, wink, wink, that Ohio State, that's now been their theme to win a championship this year. Competitive stamina. Zach, in your coaching career, how soon and how early can you feel or do you feel like your team has a championship pedigree, has championship mentality and championship players that you feel like this is a special run? Is it week one? Is it the first week of camp, or is it take like week 5 or 6?
No, I mean, you never feel that until you get into the heart of the schedule, right? You start, once Ohio State plays Wisconsin, plays Penn State, you start getting a feel for how this team handles adversity, handles those tough moments. Like this past Saturday, the offense handled, you know, a tough situation. And they won the game, and now it's like, all right, how are they going to bounce back? Not this week, not next week, but when they play Wisconsin, like, how's this offense going to show up? Can the defense keep that type of performance against Wisconsin, who traditionally moves the ball decent? They run the ball well. They usually have good play-action game. And so there's a lot of question marks around, you know, how this team will develop and handle adversity, really. And it's funny because the competitive stamina that you heard all throughout the Ohio State hype video for this week, I believe it was Jim Knowles talking, and then you heard Ryan Day reference it, and it all came from Inky Johnson. He put out a promotional video or motivational video on social media, and pure football coach in me, I saw it and I was like, wow, that is big time. And immediately I put it on our show and we discussed it. And then sure enough, Ryan Day saw the video, I doubt from us. He probably saw it from Inky, right? Or someone at Ohio State saw it and had the same reaction. Like, wow, we need to use this with our team. And now they're in these pregame, you know, speeches referencing competitive stamina. And so it's you really find out, speaking of competitive stamina, is can you be competitive when shit gets really hard consistently. That's what it is, right? Not, you know, Notre Dame, game one, high emotion, shit gets hard, you're competitive. But can you do it week two, week three, week four, week five? Can you do it over and over and over again? So no one, even Alabama right now, as loaded as they are, as well as they played in game one, they cannot sit here and say, we have a championship caliber team because it's a new team from last year. Now, there's a bunch of guys they've seen go through adversity and react to it. But once they get in the meat of that SEC schedule, they'll find out what the makeup of their team is. And that's when you'll be able to identify that characteristic that is unidentifiable before those adverse moments. And that is competitive stamina.
How much of that is on the coaching staff, or is that all on the players and the leaders of your team?
It's entirely on the players and the leaders of the team. Now, the coach's job is to try to put your players and your team and each position group in those adverse moments all offseason to try to teach them how to respond, teach them how to thrive through it. But ultimately, now where we're at now, that training is done. Now it's on the players to show up and fucking do it.
Now, in coaching wise, like, I saw a video of Kirby Smart up 48 to whatever, just absolutely lighting up that second team defense. Is that kind of his competitive spirit bleeding over? Because you don't really see that a lot when schools are up big. Is that something that's important for the young guys, or is that kind of?
No, it's really important to develop the culture and the depth, right? And that's what we're going to talk about here in a little bit with these next two games for Ohio State. I'm not interested in CJ Stroud throwing for 350 yards. Don't really give a fuck. If he struggles, that's a major problem, but he should thrive, right? It's Arkansas State. What are we talking about? I'm interested to see Kyle McCord and Devin Brown take the field. I want to see how they perform. And this coaching staff needs to coach them as hard or harder than they do the first team offense. And so that's where you develop the depth. That's where you develop that backup safety. Come week eight, a safety may fucking chip a fingernail, can't play. That kid's got to go in and he's got to play at a championship level. And so it's tough to get an entire second group to do it, but you got to coach them and develop them so that if one of those kids finds themselves in that moment, they're prepared.
How do you think Urban would have reacted to a win like Ohio State just had against Notre Dame last week?
Oh my God, the offensive meetings would have been brutal. I mean, his philosophy was always when you play extremely well, you got to bring them back down to reality, coach the shit out of them, coach them even harder after a big win where you dominate, right? When you have struggles, when there's adversity, right, and you struggle, you have to build up confidence. So this whole week, he would have been beating down the coaches, but building up the offensive players, trying to get them to elevate, right, to push through it and perform at a higher level. Now, the defense, he would have been hard on the defense because the defense played so well, and you have to massage that in the right way because you can't be motherfucking the defense, giving praise to the offense when the defense played well and the offense didn't, right? Or else the offensive players are like, the fuck? Or the defensive players are like, what the fuck? We played really well. Why are you ripping our ass? Go rip their ass.
But it's definitely delicate balance.
At least that was his intent. Now, he also was so overreactionary and dramatic that when the offense wasn't clicking, he was sometimes a psychopath on offensive coaches and players. So that's what he tried to do, at least.
How is it coaching in a game like this? Obviously, like in-game coaching, like what level of perfection do you expect when you're clearly the better team? Or how are you going into coaching a game against Arkansas State?
Well, if you're coaching Ohio State in this game, you're sitting there saying, all right, the starters, that first group, we have to execute at an extremely high level. This is about us. This is not about Arkansas State. This is about when we call this play, it needs to be a great route. It needs to be great pass pro. CJ needs to deliver the ball on time with great accuracy, right? In the run game, they need to have great double teams, create great movement, you know, no mental errors, and execute flawlessly, right? And that shouldn't be a problem against Arkansas State. So that's what you're really focused on, is just that flawless execution and just shining it up, fine-tuning your offensive scheme, your offensive execution. And then this game is ultimately about, you know, handling your business and then letting those young guys go play. Let them get some experience. Find out how good, you know, J.K. Johnson is. Find out how good, you know, these backup offensive linemen are. Which quarterback is your backup quarterback? You could say all you want about the performance in training camp, and that is an indication on how they're going to do in the year. But right now, you want to see Devin Brown as a freshman go out there in a game atmosphere and execute the offense and see how it looks, because this is when the lights are on. And both him and Kyle McCord, they're going to be as nervous as CJ Stroud is playing Notre Dame, because they're on the field now in what is a meaningful scenario, right, to them, which is in front of a crowd on TV. Like, this is nuts on the line. Got to play. Got to perform.
I want to talk about quarterbacks. At what point does this quarterback competition for next year start? Has it already begun? And how much can the coaches take from their first game action? Obviously, Kyle McCord has played against Akron. We assume that both quarterbacks will play on Saturday if the score goes according to plan, unless something goes drastically wrong. Devin Brown and Kyle McCord, how do you see it moving forward? How do you see it playing out this game?
Well, I think there truly is two different conversations here. One is, who's the quarterback that goes in and mop up duty, right? Like, if they blow out Arkansas State, they're going to play both quarterbacks, but who's the first guy to go in? And that's going to be Kyle McCord, just by seniority. Neither has really truly won the job, but it's a totally different conversation than if all of a sudden CJ Stroud is out for whatever reason, mm-hmm. and you have to select your quarterback to try to go on a championship run. I still think right now that would be Kyle McCord. Devin Brown's in year one. I don't think that he's going to be ready as a freshman to execute at the level that Ryan would need him to. That doesn't mean he doesn't win the job in the fall once CJ leaves either. But I think right now the answer to both is Kyle McCord, but they are different conversations. It's not the same conversation. Who's the guy that goes in next, or who's taking over this program and we're handing the keys to? That's two different conversations.
No, I agree. And I have an example for you, Zach. Do you remember who the first backup quarterback was to come in 2020?
I don't.
It was Jack Miller.
Really?
And then when Justin Fields went down, you know, had the injury against Clemson, who was the quarterback that trotted out there?
Oh, absolutely. You knew who it was going to be.
CJ Stroud.
Yeah, you knew who it was going to be.
No, that's just a little point on that. And I know the backup position, I mean, the most famous backups in the world, I always joke around, are Ohio State backup quarterbacks. I mean, because they all want to be seen. They all want it. Everyone loves to project who the next crop of quarterbacks is. Do either of these guys really pop out to you as, like, really dynamic kind of prospects, or is it still in wait-and-see mode?
No, I mean, it's wait-and-see mode. I mean, I wouldn't say unimpressed, but – I haven't been wowed. I haven't been blown away by either kid in the minimal that we've seen them. And even the feedback from the Woody Hayes is, you know, they're still not there yet, right? They're still developing it. And talking to the people at, you know, on the inside, there's not a call yet. Like, it's not like, oh, we see it, Devin Brown's going to be the guy, which you would see that, right? When Dwayne Haskins was here, you could see, like, oh, he's going to be the guy. Like, he's not ready yet. He's not there yet, but he's going to be the guy. You could see it coming, right? Even with Joe Burrow and performing, you know, well, you could see Dwayne was going to be the better quarterback in 2018. So they don't have that feeling right now. There's not a feeling that, oh, Kyle McCord's going to be the guy, or, oh, Devin Brown is going to be the guy. They like both players. They like mm-hmm. both kids. There's a lot of development that needs to happen. And it's going to be truly a great quarterback battle to watch come next spring.
Yeah.
Unless DJ Uiagalelei just jumps in that portal, and then you're like, ooh, wait a minute. This kid is supremely talented. And I know people are like, can you coach him out of everything they did at Clemson? Yes, you can coach him out of that. Look at fucking Justin Fields. They didn't coach him a lick at Georgia. He came to Ohio State and got developed, got coached, got trained, and he was on that field ready to roll.
And then there's that looming giant, Zach, that we won't talk about too much. But in 2024, I hate to call a high school kid a looming giant, but all reports are indicating that Dylan Raiola just continues to take leap after leap at the high school level, high-level development, you know, pro pedigree, has the size and willingness to run, multiple arm angles, like a true 1.0, not an Arch Manning situation. Like, the kid can really play. And obviously 2024, yeah. It's like, how long do you want that kid to sit once he gets to campus?
And that's what it is, right? You're looking at do you have a guy that can take over for 2 years, let Dylan Raiola learn as a freshman and take over as a sophomore, a lot like CJ Stroud did. And do you have that guy on campus, right? Mm-hmm. Is Kyle McCord that guy? Is Devin Brown that guy? Or one of the two? It doesn't matter. Do you have that guy that can still put you in the playoff conversation the next 2 years to get you to this, you know, promising, you know, generational talent, as we throw around way too frequently? And that's what Ryan Day is going to have to decide. And he's going to have to decide that probably right after the season.
Yeah.
Because if not, he's going to have to go get a stopgap to get from CJ Stroud to Dylan Raiola. And then hopefully he pans out. Otherwise, you have a whole nother situation on your hands.
Yeah, absolutely. Zach, I want to ask you about the receivers on Saturday. What's more important for the receivers? Like, well, is this important for the coaching staff? Do you feel like the receivers need to get their confidence back?
And oh, yeah.
It's a lackluster performance against Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, I think they, I just think they need to go play and achieve some success. Some of these young guys haven't played a lot of college football, and they just need to achieve success. And Jaxon Smith-Njigba needs to take these next 2 weeks off to get to 100% health. And then you got to watch these young guys play. And inevitably, what's going to happen? These kids are talented, right? They're playing a team that is far less talented. They're going to pop and make some plays, and then fucking Buckeye message boards everywhere will be like, Keon Graves is fucking amazing. He's going to be an All-American. And you're like, that was Arkansas State. Calm down. But it'll be great for him to go out and make a play, right? That adds to experience. That builds his confidence. That allows him to come back to the Woody Hayes on Sunday and go practice with a different aura around him. So it's critical for confidence that they go out and execute, and just game reps, getting game reps against somebody else that's going as hard as they can, right? We've talked about practicing like a pro at Ohio State. Those DBs, they're covering, I mean, it's first round talents all over the field, but they're not game reps, right? They're not diving and taking you out as they break up a pass. Like they're practicing intelligently, understanding it's practice, and we don't want to get anyone hurt. So it's entirely different getting that game rep, regardless who you're getting it against.
Also, the importance of that, like the importance of that moment, is obviously bigger in games. Like the one thing that always kind of talked about is like, at least here when we record stuff at the radio station, if you mess up in a recording, it's like, okay, we'll walk you back through it. We'll correct it. We'll teach it.
Yeah.
Same thing like in practice, but obviously like in a game, that drop hurts a little more. That missed route leading to an interception hurts a little more.
Well, and what you see a lot of times is when young kids get in games, they do things they've never done in practice, right? Because there's so much going on, the chaos, right? The chaotic environment that is playing a major college football game. All of a sudden, they're not getting their depths on routes. They've abandoned techniques that they've used for 8 months and been trained and coached and taught to do. Like that is where game experience comes in, where you need to be comfortable to just execute the way you do in practice in a game. And you can't do it without actually getting those game reps.
Yeah, super, super important. Obviously hoping for Ohio State to do really well this weekend. I want to see those receivers kind of get out and get loose. Do you think that there's an attempt to get Trayvon Henderson this week, his confidence back a little bit, or is there lacking confidence? Or like how would you manage the running back room, giving guys carries but also keeping guys fresh? And obviously,
well,
the last thing you want is getting somebody injured.
Well, there's twofold, right? You want to unleash Trayvon Henderson a little bit. You want to get him going because he didn't have that impact performance like people thought he might in game one. So you want to give him his touches, let him make a couple great plays. But ultimately, you don't want to show anything to Wisconsin that you plan on doing against them, right? Mm-hmm. That is maybe a little bit different, maybe a unique package. And you also don't want to get anybody hurt in this game. So it's a fine line. You want to do that stuff, but at the same time, fuck his stats. His confidence will be fine. You don't want to get anybody injured, and you don't want to show something that Wisconsin can then prepare for that you didn't have to.
Quick question, last one before we get off this topic, Zach. Like, we just talked about prep and about showing things on tape. Is this a game where a coach like Ryan Day would put something on tape that they never intend to use just to force Wisconsin to prepare for it?
Nah, you don't. You usually don't do that. I mean,
really?
No, you
keep thinking about the onside kick against Maryland, that little pooch kick.
Yeah, I mean, you might do something like that you are practicing, but ultimately, if you love it and you've worked on it, you don't want to waste it, right? Like the reverse pass that we threw against Alabama. You don't want to run that shit on Toledo. You run that shit on Toledo, it's like, fucking for what? If we need a reverse pass to score against Toledo, we suck. And two, you don't want other teams having that clip on film. So I've honestly never had that happen in my career where you said, let's run this to set up this. It's just you execute your base offense and you should be able to win the game very handedly doing so.
By what week is kind of the playbook all been out there? Like week four, is it like everything you guys are going to do? Week five, maybe everything except a wrinkle here or there. Like how long do you like hold on to the playbook and not show anything?
I mean, outside of certain things you're going to do to attack a different schematic defense, you play Notre Dame week one, your whole offense is in. That's a must win. You're throwing everything out there. Now, there might be a couple concepts that aren't great. Like they don't play a ton of man coverage, so you're not going to get into a lot of your crosser game. But Ohio State still ran a lot of their man coverage beaters. And you saw it when Emeka Egbuka's running through zones, not settling down because they just hadn't repped that enough against zone. So those plays need to be run against zone coverage also, but you're not going to throw out your entire man coverage beater package against a team that barely plays any man. Then all of a sudden you go play whoever that plays man, that whole package is live. So you're not holding anything back when you play Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. Outside of just what is good against Notre Dame. That's what you're going to have in the game plan.
Okay. That is fair. Obviously, that's not my forte. Zach, this is the part of the show where you talk about the preview stuff, and I bow out.
That's perfect. Well, I did want to throw this up there. I gave it to you yesterday. And while we're here, we'll bring in our lead handicapper for Menace to Picks, our handicapping service. The link is all the way at the bottom of the bio. But these are my three picks. And I told you last week, even and our handicapping team put out a teaser that hit. So you should have played that one. These are my three picks. I certainly wouldn't parlay them. That's probably got a 20% chance to win. But these are my three favorite plays for this weekend of college football, if you are so inclined to bet on it. And so all you got to do is go to MyBookie, use promo code Menace, get a free deposit match. You put 500 in, they match it for 500, and then you have free money to gamble. So go over to MyBookie.ag, sign up, whether you want to play this, any of these plays or not, because in about a week or two, I'm going to let our Menace Mensa talk about our analytic model and when he thinks that'll be live. But these are my three favorite plays. Moral of the story. But without further ado, I will welcome our Mensa, our fucking nerd, our data analytic man. What's up, man?
What's up, Zach? How we doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. Enjoying the Friday.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. Well, here's just a little background. If you missed him 2 weeks ago, he'll be on every Friday just to give us kind of his insight into the weekend of gambling. And right now we have a full-blown analytic model to attack baseball. It's been unbelievable all summer. And we really went away from playing games, like betting on the Yankees to win or betting on the Indians to win. And yes, they're still the fucking Indians.
Of course.
We went away from that because it's hard to predict bullpen pitchers. And I mean, first five inning bets are better than full game bets. But we really attacked this analytic model that Mensa built to attack individual player performances. You have far more control. So just talk to me about that process. And maybe you got a player or two this weekend that they could play in baseball that you love.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, baseball, there's so many variables to begin with, you know, outside of, you know, bullpen, like you mentioned. Guys go through slumps all the time, whatever it happens. So we found that the best way to attack it was just by going an individual prop basis and specifically starting pitchers, strikeouts, hits allowed, earned runs, walks, you know, all that stuff. So we just came off a sweep yesterday. We had Corbin Burns over 7.5 strikeouts. I think he finished with 14 and under 4.5 hits allowed. He gave up 3 in 8 innings to San Francisco. And then Dylan Cease, we had him over 8.5 strikeouts. He finished with 9 and then under 3.5 hits as well against the A's. All four of those hit. We won 42 units yesterday. We're up 68 units on the week for baseball props. I got some ones. I got three lined up that I really like for tonight. Give him out some free stuff here. I like Noah Syndergaard under 4.5 strikeouts. He's going up against the Washington Nationals, who are top three in the league overall in strikeout rate, under 20% on the season and over their last 30. Syndergaard has gone under this mark in 4 of his last 6 starts, and he's terrible at home in Philly. I think he is 12 strikeouts in 23.2 innings pitched. So I like that one for sure. Dane Dunning, the Texas Rangers started tonight. I like him over 5.5 hits allowed. He goes against the Toronto Blue Jays, who are kind of clicking on offense right now. Four of their guys, Merrifield, Matt Chapman, Bo Bichette, and George Springer, all own weighted on base averages of 370 or greater versus Dunning in their career. And Dunning is bottom 35% of the league in expected batting average against. So a lot of our analytics point to him going over 5.5 hits allowed. And lastly, Cincinnati's own Nick Lodolo, over 6.5 strikeouts tonight. I think we've played Lodolo's strikeout prop 4 times this year, and are 3-1. Young prospect for them who's got electric stuff, mid-90s fastball and a wicked breaking ball. But he faces the Milwaukee Brewers tonight, who are striking out almost 30% against left-handed pitching over the last 30 days. So Noah Syndergaard under 4.5 strikeouts, Dane Dunning over 5.5 hits allowed, and Nick Lodolo over 6.5 strikeouts. Those are my three best bets for baseball tonight. And I'm also going to throw out a college football prop for tonight's game, Louisville, Central Florida. I know you mentioned we'll be going live with our props for NFL and college football in just about a week or two. I like to, you know, make sure we have enough data accumulated to really, you know, have a strong hold on what we're playing. But Malik Cunningham, over 44.5 rushing yards tonight against Central Florida. Against them last year, he ran for 99 yards and 2 touchdowns. Louisville got stunned last week by Syracuse. They lost 31-7, and Cunningham had 34 rushing yards. But this UCF defense, they lost 3 of their starting defensive line from last year. And where their strength really lies is in their pass coverage. I think last year they were 15th in passing success rate, 29th in expected pass average, sixth in explosive passing allowed. So they're going to make Cunningham run the ball, I think. And for a team that UCF was 78th last year in defensive yards allowed and 118th in rushing explosiveness, I think 44 and a half is way too low. I think Cunningham goes for 50 plus. I know 44 and a half is the lowest that I saw. A couple books have him 49 and a half. I like that over too. So play that with confidence tonight and let's make some money.
Well, that's moral of the story is they need to win this game. You can't lose to Syracuse and then come back and lose to UCF. So all bets are off. They're not trying to save Malik for anything. They're going to run the shit out of him when they need to. And he's naturally just going to take off and run like he does and get his scramble yards. So I love that prop. So there you go. You got four props right there. And if you can't tell, our analytical model will be live in 2 weeks-ish. And just get ready because we're going to fucking destroy college football and NFL. It's going to be big time. So we're excited about it. If you're interested in sports handicapping advice, the link is above Mensa right there. It's also in the bio. It's patreon.com/menacetopicks, where you get analysis like that every single day. And the way I do it is because I use it, right? They send it to me and I just go through and I say, all right, here's my tool. Right, these are the best bets that their analytical model says, and I pick which ones I like. And that way, it's on me if it loses, honestly, because they give out great analytics, and it's just a tool in your toolbox for gambling. So I look forward, Mensa, to getting to college football plays as we get later in the year. But as I mentioned, I gave out my three. So we will see you next Friday. I appreciate
you. Sounds good, Zach.
All right, we'll see you.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. So also want to mention that we are going back and running it back. The squares board that we ran for Notre Dame, we had a $3,000 winner. I should have brought their name on here. I'll shout them out on Monday's show. The big $3,000 grand prize winner hit for Notre Dame. So we're going to run it back for Wisconsin. I was planning on waiting until the end of the season to do more, but I've gotten a lot of texts like, are you doing a board for Arkansas State? I'm not doing a separate board. We have the Buckeye squares for the whole season board going, but we're going to do a big board for Wisconsin because it's that next massive matchup. $100 a square, Venmo to Cameron Media, and as many squares as you want, $100 a square, and you have a chance to win $500 first and third quarter, $1,000 at halftime, or $3,000 if you hit the final score. So it's a fun way if you want to put a little bit of money on a gamble to take a shot at 1 in 24 chance of winning. Of winning $3,000 on the final score. So look out for that. We will tweet about it. Just go to Camera Media and drop that hundo and we'll have fun with it. All right, Chris, what do you got?
It's Super Chat time. Get them in there. Super Chat Follow Friday. We try to answer all the questions. So we'll go as long as Super Chats are coming in. The chat's absolutely jumping. Bro, the most committed Georgia fan ever, Kirby Visor. He's been pulling up to the show every day for like the last month and a half, man. No one is more committed than him. He comes here just to spew hatred, and we love it. Anyway, thank you, Garrett Bailey, for the five. Was thinking about ways to get CJ to run. We should show him some Craig Krenzel tape.
You could show anyone you want. Show Josh Allen last night. You could show Bryce Young. I mean, Tom Brady. Like, show him non-athletes. Show him, like, equivalent athletes. I don't care who you show him. Mm-hmm. But he just at some point has to realize that for his game, if he's a team player, his team needs him to do it, period. If he's a selfish player, that's fine. He needs to do it for his own repertoire, his own skill set. And we talked about it before. If they're going to bracket people and play underneath coverage for his own well-being and own performance, he needs to take off and run. I mean, I don't know what else you can do other than, like, I don't know, just like, force the kid with a cattle prod. Like, if you don't run, just zing him. I don't know how you do it other than show him the why he needs to and then let him decide that it's time to do it. That's the only way I know to get him to do it.
We don't need him to do it all the time. It's like mid-range jump shots in basketball. It's like at some point you can't just shoot only threes and layups. Every now and again, it's okay to shoot a mid-range jump shot. I watched James Harden for 3 years refuse to shoot the mid-range jumper. It was wide open. It was like he would have that space deck, and instead he would just either back to the three-point line or run straight into a crowd of people. It's like, holy.
Yeah, at some point, you got to be versatile. Mm-hmm. And if you're not versatile, defenses will attack your lack of versatility. And CJ needs to be more versatile, and period.
It's literally in his arsenal. He has a 47-yard touchdown run as a freshman.
Yeah, he's a good athlete. Uh-huh. And you watch it when he escapes the pockets and throws the ball. He is a good athlete. He just needs to cross that line of scrimmage.
Bearded Beauty, thank you for the 10. Great question. Top D2 or D3 schools in Ohio? Are we talking football? or just high school?
I'd imagine he's talking about college. Okay. And that's a good question. I don't really know.
I know Baldwin Wallace.
I mean, Baldwin Wallace traditionally has been good. The Tressel family up there. Mm-hmm. I know, you know, Mount Union is obviously the cream of the crop when it comes to D3 football programs. I'm not sure what programs are D2 in the state of Ohio. That's a great question. I'd have to look it up. I honestly am not that familiar. I know Findlay has been a pretty decent D2 team. I don't know how they are now. I don't follow it well enough to give sound advice to anyone that's making a college decision. But that's a good question. I apologize. I don't really know that well.
Akron should be a D2 school.
Akron is a D2 school that plays a D1 schedule, so don't go there. Dayton, I won't even say Dayton, but I know a couple kids that went to Dayton. One of them transferred out. I know that's a D2 program.
Well, yeah, we'll definitely have to look more into that and definitely spin the block on that one. Thank you, Tony, for the two. Unfortunately, three kids were hit, but everyone was okay. That is super sad, talking about the gun violence going down in Florida. That's unbelievable. I hate it.
Over a fucking football game.
I hate it. Not worth crashing out over. Never is. No. Thank you, Anthony, for the five. Would OSU using running backs more as a check down option versus Notre Dame have punished the bracket shell stuff they were using? If CJ won't run, I'm curious about the other options. Ooh, that's a great question.
Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely. I mean, teams, they're still someone accounting for the running back, and then they obviously will be in more one-on-one situations. And that was kind of my criticism of not getting Travion involved in the throw game some more. Is, listen, if they're going to play these coverages, bracket coverages, and just the, you know, drop eight coverages, the drop eight coverages are different, right? Now you have more underneath coverage, so checking it down, there's still more people under there, right? And so it is one answer in certain specific scenarios where they're bracketing guys or playing two man, but you still have a man player to deal with, and now your back has to beat that man player. I just happen to think that Travion should excel at that. Mm-hmm. But in the drop eight coverages and stuff like that, it's tough to throw the ball. One answer is don't get in fucking passing situations where they will drop eight. That is third and nines, third and tens, third and elevens. Like, you got to stay out of that. You got to run the ball well enough and execute your throw game well enough to be in third and fives, because no one's going to drop eight on third and five, third and four. There's too big a threat of run. You can't drop eight, or else you're just going to get gashed. The other thing is, though, is these teams that drop out coverage, I haven't seen a draw play yet. And I don't know if I saw one all year last year, whether it's a running back draw or a quarterback draw, because that's the equalizer, right? Not only is scrambling when it's wide open in bracket coverages, but when teams drop everybody out on third and seven, for you to just set up, let them drop, and then take off on a quarterback draw with a lead blocker as a guard or running back, you could take the life out of a drop eight defense. So there's several answers for it, and I was kind of surprised they didn't get the running backs involved more to take advantage of the brackets at least.
Makes sense. Thank you, Eric, for the five. As someone who bet North Carolina -1.5, that onside kick return for a touchdown was life-saving for me. Holy smokes, Zach, they were probably going through it, because then Appalachian State went and scored, and North Carolina ended up winning by two because of the two-point conversion.
Right. Man, you talk about the opposite of a bad beat.
Good one. A good one. Thank you, Jason, for the five. I know Urban and Day have different offenses, but what would Urban do differently with the current offensive personnel? That's a great question.
I mean, the throw game would be different. Urban had a more of an archaic throw game, but you know, he constantly seeked that hybrid guy, yeah, right? That Curtis Samuel type of guy. And I don't know that they have that guy on roster, honestly. Maybe
Caleb Brown would be the one. That's the one that played running back in high school. I'm from Chicago.
So I will tell you this much. If Urban was running the offense, CJ Stroud would be a runner. I mean, he would run the ball, and he probably would have never came to Ohio State, but Urban was obsessed with quarterback run because it's the ultimate number equalizer, right? You always are had it up on quarterback run, almost always at least. And so that's the one difference, is CJ Stroud would have no option. He would not be the quarterback if he would never run. That's the biggest difference. You wouldn't, CJ Stroud would probably be somewhere else right now.
Yeah, we'd be on year four of Tathan Martell. Thank you, Gordon, for the two. Tell Frost that rule. He should be down on siding. That's about the onside kick stuff. Facts. Yeah. Let me scroll down for a quick sec. Another one. You'd be able to coach a soft gen player, Zach? Would you be able to coach a current player? That's a good question for you.
Yeah, I would have adapted. I mean, it's a different style nowadays because they can use the transfer portal, and the landscape has changed, but I would have changed with it, I'm sure. I mean, the way I coached prior to the portal era probably would not be very effective, or I would have kids transfer out, I'm sure, but I would have adjusted. You have to.
You talked about kind of whenever you got to, I mean, when you started coaching receivers, you had to convince these kids not to transfer anyway before the transfer portal, just kind of that first what, X amount of months, because of how difficult it was.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And kids could transfer. They just had to sit out a year. Mm-hmm. And people forget, before the transfer portal era, there was the exemptions that almost always got approved, right?
Justin Fields was pre-transfer portal era.
Justin Fields. I mean, Trayvon Grimes was the only player I ever had transfer. He got approved right away at Florida. Tate Martell, after I got fired, transferred to Miami, approved right away, All before the portal. So the portal is just more convenient and easier, and there's no fear that the NCAA could come back and say, no, you're not eligible. But when I was coaching, kids could still transfer, and most always they were eligible right away.
Definitely. What a weird time. They weren't pre-transfer portal era, Justin Fields. It was just that was before the pre-one-time exemption rule. Let me correct that before I get fucking blasted on Twitter. Ty, thank you for the five. How much is CJ's hesitancy to run the ball him versus coaching? Do you think he was run happy when he arrived and it was drilled into him to stay in the pocket more?
No, I mean, it's he's getting coached up on what to do in every scenario, right? So they'll watch film, and they have watched film for 3 years and said, listen, this is where you extend the play and give the receivers more time to try to complete the pass. And this is a scenario where it is wide open and you have chunk yards in front of you. You have to go get those yards. So there's a certain time for each, right? A lot of it has to do with pursuit and what's going on in front of you. Like if the pocket breaks down and he escapes the pocket, but pursuit is coming, he runs, he's going to get a 1 or 2 yard gain. That's not the time to run. That's the time to extend it and try to find a receiver popping free. Now, if the pocket opens up in the middle, like we watched last week, and all of a sudden they're in bracket coverage 10, 12 yards downfield, and all you see is green grass, you got to fucking go. That's where you got to take yards that the defense is giving you. So it's two different scenarios, and he's being coached on both, when to do each.
Can't argue with that. Daquan, thank you for the two. Can we get a Bills defensive breakdown, NFL breakdowns?
Hey, I'm here for it. The fucking best defense in the NFL from what I watched last night.
Yeah, they're insane. Thoughts on using Trey Sermon in a Curtis Samuel capacity with Chop being the Mike Weber type guy? Thank you, Garrett, for the five. Great question.
You got to be careful doing that because Travion Henderson is very talented, but I don't think he could play receiver. Curtis Samuel legitimately could have played receiver or running back and did both. It's that hybrid role is a very unique role, and you have to have a very specific skill set. And Curtis was really the only one we had when I was at Ohio State that could truly go in there and run power and counter and all those run plays like Percy Harvin used to do, and also go out and run a corner route or a curl route or a fucking bender, a post. He could do both. He had that skill set, and he was the only player – I'm trying to think. He was the only player in my time at Ohio State that could do both. Like Jalen Marshall was great in that role, but he could never run counter. He could never go in and run split zone. He could never run true run plays. He could run jet sweeps. He could do stuff like that, but he was never going to go in and run a true run play. Curtis was the only player we had in the Urban Meyer era that did that, right? And so Trey, I don't think, has the skill set to go run a fucking corner route and beat a safety on, you know, break a safety off. I don't think that's his skill set. Now, he could be more a hybrid back in the pass game without playing receiver, right? Out of the backfield, they could do more things to accentuate his ability to catch the ball and how good he is in open space. But he's not a hybrid like Curtis Samuel, no.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, Curtis Samuel. Now,
that being said, they could run some two-back stuff to accentuate Mayan as more of a Mike
Talk
Weber.
Talk about two-back stuff. How would you run two-back stuff, and does it benefit anybody else other than the running, having both running backs on the field at the same time?
You can develop some dynamic run game and some play action off of a two-back set. The problem is there's a lot of time invested. Here's the problem, that the consternation Ryan has. There would be a lot of time invested to build that package. And with Evan Pryor out, one injury or just one like cramp and the package is useless and all that time is wasted, right? Because you have two guys that can play running back at this level. If one of them goes down, all that time you wasted on that two back package is gone and you'll never get it back. So it's rare that you'll actually spend the time to do that unless you're going to make it a main staple of your offense. So I don't know that I would invest in it, honestly, just because of that you can't waste time in college football. You only have X amount of time with these players. And if you waste time sinking it into a package like that, that could be problematic. I think there's a way to do it out of one back, just with personnel packages when either of the kid is in the game, that they can still accentuate those skill sets differently.
That makes sense. I always wondered why we didn't really see too many two-back sets. And so the more I thought about it, like, you can't obviously give two guys the ball. And with kind of the corporate crop receivers we've always brought in, you know, one would think that kind of the way things would be to go is just to one running back. You think you could run a counter with Braxton Miller?
Braxton ran a quarterback counter. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So I just talked about guys who could be hybrid guys. That's all. I was just kind of.
Yeah, I mean, Braxton, that was his one interior run that was kind of an interior run that he ran. And counter is very different than running power or split zone. That is a true running back run. Counter can be, I mean, JT Barrett ran counter. Mm-hmm. Braxton Miller ran counter. Counter is the one outlier that's not truly a direct run because it's a counter. You start this way and go that way, right? It's a little bit of a misdirection. So Braxton probably had 1,000 yards on counter. That might be an exaggeration, but he had a shitload of production off a counter.
No, I was just curious about guys who could be running backs and wide receivers at college level. I mean, he was the only one that came to mind that you didn't say. Obviously, like, Paris Campbell wouldn't have been.
See, I think Paris could have done it, but he never did. He played running back in high school. I think Paris could have been that guy. It's just we never repped him at it. We never really developed him in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Paris was – bro, I watched Paris, and we were probably at some of the same games, Zach, if you ever came to Akron to see Paris.
We probably were. I remember this annoying kid with the lived in the Akron area, young kid, just squeaky voice and everything. That I looked at Urban, and I was like, what the fuck is this kid doing here? Is he – Make a Wish? What the fuck is this?
Not Make a Wish, bro. Chill out. I'll have you know, Zach, when I went to games, I never spoke a word. I was always like parent watching, and I sat up in the box with the binoculars. Never spoke.
Must have been your doppelganger then.
Oh, yeah. Must have been. Dude, I was like, wait, how? I was 5'6", and we had like 130 as a high school senior. So if you were looking for me, you would have to look down, Zach, because you're like 6'3". Oh, goodness gracious. Lance Parrish, thank you for the five. If you have a question, shoot the question. I mean, I understand the five, but also, like, if you want to just donate five, that's great. We do have a Patreon you can join that really allows you to do more of that $5 than just to throw it at us. Also, Zach, I have a question. This is my own personal mailbag question. So, obviously, this is a part of the show where, because we work together, I don't have to pay to ask a question. I get paid to ask the questions. Do teams peak too early? And could Georgia be a case of a team that peaked too early? Or is that not really a thing in football like it is basketball?
That's not really a thing. I mean, teams hit their peak, and then they usually stay there for the remainder of the season, barring injury or, you know, you don't usually peak and then fall down like basketball teams can. Football teams are constantly trying to develop and push to achieve that level of execution. And once they've got it, they kind of get in a groove, and then it sustains. The most terrifying teams are like we watch Georgia, not to say that they're there yet. It's been one game, but where they're executing at that high of a level early, it's like, holy shit, how good are they going to be by the end of the year? And barring injury, the answer is really fucking good.
That's fair. I guess that is the most terrifying thing. Like, watching Georgia, that's kind of what freaks me out. Because, like, I mean, so first of all, I don't know if Georgia can sustain kind of what we saw on Saturday. But if they can, if this is not the finished full product of Georgia, I'm not quite sure how to get there. You're Ohio State, you're chasing kind of that what we saw on Sunday.
You're just trying to get your team maximized, and then it comes down to going to win a big game. That's all it is. The whole season's a rat race to maximize your team, right? As fast as you can, enhance, level up, develop, and then once your team's reached that ceiling, they've peaked, they've hit their stride. Are you good enough to go beat another talented team that is also peaked? Right. That's what it comes down to. Do you make those handful of plays to win the game, or do they make those handful of plays to win the game?
That's fair. We had another question. Shout out to my DMs. I'm kind of, you know, that I will Martin Luther Dabo win another title before the end of his newly minted contract?
No.
No, not at all.
No.
All right. Here we go. This is a branch of question. If you're Dabo Sweeney, what's the first hire you're making this offseason?
I'm hiring an offensive coordinator.
Name him.
Without a doubt. And a big name offensive coordinator, like the Jim Knowles of offense. That's who I'm hiring. Mm-hmm. Whoever the fuck that is.
The Jim Knowles of offense. Holy shit. It's like, you don't just find, those people don't just grow on trees.
No, they don't.
Did you see, I don't know if you listened to the call, but they were talking about how Jim Knowles teaches and he uses a lot of music stuff and game show stuff, you know, making football fun. Were you that kind of coach, or you were just pretty square jaw, go get it?
No, I mean, I definitely had a unique way of teaching, but it was, we did music pre-meeting. I mean, I would always let them end 5 minutes early and put on a song. Like I used music, but when it came out of teaching, I used visual learning. I used motor learning where we went on the field and walked stuff through, and spatial learning where you're putting, you know, trash cans or bodies out there and teaching them concepts in space. And then obviously verbal and visual learning in the classroom or the meeting room. And most of my teach tools outside of that were cut-ups and Keenan Bailey was unbelievable. He would help me put together NFL cut-ups to watch, you know, guys that these kids watch make millions of dollars to do certain things and show them how they execute them so that they can learn from it and take it to their own game and execute it similarly. Like Cooper Kupp right now, I would be all over it. We'd have so many Cooper Kupp cut-ups, you wouldn't even know what to do.
White guy cut-ups. I love it. Zach, I got nothing else left for the show, man. You got anything else you want to hit? We are going live tomorrow, right? Maybe?
We're going live. So this weekend schedule, we're going live post-game at Ohio State. It's a noon game, so I'd imagine it's around 4 o'clock. So set a reminder on your phone. We're going live post-game, and then we'll go live on Sunday. I got to figure out what time we can do that. But we'll go live call-in show on Sunday. And if you're interested in that phone number, all you got to do is go to Patreon.com/Menace2Sports and sign up and get the phone number and you can call in. And if you don't want to do that, you don't want to pay whatever the amount is to get that phone number, you can still watch. It's live on YouTube on Sunday. We'll get you the time. And I told you, for the rest of football season, every single day, Chris and I are going live. Every day.
Every day.
We will take no days off. Maybe the bye weekend, but we'll see about that. But we are going every single day to talk all things college football, not just Ohio State. So buckle up. This shit is fucking coming. So that's all I got, Chris. Menace out. And as we used to say, go fuck yourself, San Diego.